Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We will get to the former president of Chile, now an undersecretary at the UN, in our end of war series, Michelle Bachelet, on the question of whether war could be reduced by having more women in positions of high authority. But before we get to Michelle Bachelet and the latest installment in our End of War series, I'll just take 1 minute here to remind you that this is day 4 of our spring membership drive. We are asking that everybody who listens to this program and this station on a very regular basis makes a contribution of monetary support. So if you would do that, we would really, really appreciate it at 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online to support not-for-profit independent public radio here in New York City, WNYC. By the way, I got my math checked by the team over here during the news. They calculated for me that 25 cents a day for WNYC would be an annual contribution of $88.75. I don't know if that takes into account that this is a leap year, but 25 cents a day for WNYC. If you had to put that quarter in the slot, you would do it without thinking about it on a daily basis, I'm pretty sure. So how about an $88.75 pledge or thereabouts? Anyway, thanks for picking a dollar value, whatever it is, and supporting the station here in our spring membership drive. Again, it's 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. And thank you so very much. Now we continue our series, End of War, in which we're asking, is war inevitable, or can human beings put armed conflict behind us? You know, one of the most common responses we get to our end of war question is that it is possible, but only if women are in charge. For example, here's a response posted this week on the Guardian newspaper website, which embedded our project. This Guardian reader writes, "Above all, curtailing humanity's tendency to violence pivots on the question of gender equality. Patriarchal society breeds violence," this person writes, and adds, "as they trickle into positions of power, women have been shown to advocate for more equal distribution of resources." So is feminization of government a key to ending war? I am delighted now to have as a very special guest in our End of War series for much of this hour, Michelle Bachelet. She was president of Chile from 2006 to 2010. She had previously been the country's defense minister and has a graduate degree in military studies. In a very unusual combination, she had also been the country's minister of health and had been a pediatrician. She is now executive director of UN Women, an agency created 2 years ago to foster women's rights and the involvement of women in government. One of its initiatives is to get women more involved in conflict resolution to prevent wars. President Bachelet, we are thrilled that you are giving us this time today. Welcome to WNYC. Can you hear me, President Bachelet? President Bachelet, can you hear me now?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly.
Thank you so much for coming on. Can you tell us first about your work today with the group UN Women? Is part of the premise that women's involvement can make conflict resolution more effective at preventing war?
Well, I think that clearly if we want, first of all, to end war and real peace, women are essential, but also if we want to prevent war. Of course, not always a war is preventable, but it's clear that no matter the reason for war, could it be land or water disputes, which are exacerbated by lack of sustainable development or civil wars to grab power, it's clear the impact war has on women. And we have seen it in many places, how women have, when there has been a conflict, they have said enough is enough. And when they are given the opportunity, women try, of course, to prevent it because they believe that wars produce much more harm and damage damage than wins, and they try to be clear representatives of a more rational and, I would say, peaceful approach to conflict. What happens, though, and I think that's one of the challenges, is that in many of countries who are living conflict today or have lived in the last decades or post-conflict, women are not strong enough in decision-making positions. So our work in UN Women is try to support women's organizations, women leaders, so they can really play that important role.
I'd like to read you another response to our question, is war inevitable, from the Guardian newspaper website, which has embedded our End of War project. This Guardian reader named Julia C. Beeman writes, "More women in charge would be a good start to ending war. Testosterone is a major bearer of aggression. Women are more inclined by nature to negotiation and cooperation than men. I applaud the efforts already being made in this direction," she writes. "Estrogen must have its day if we are to modify our propensity to war." That from Julia C. Beeman, a reader of The Guardian, posting on their site. So, President Bachelet, how much do you agree with that Guardian reader?
Well, I have to say that I do agree that women usually prefer cooperation and dialogue than confrontation. They usually try to build win-win solutions to conflict because conflict is part of women, people's life. So I think part of that, I don't know if estrogens are the reason. What I've seen, though, and being a president also, when I've seen discussions that could even lead to physical, I would say, expression, it has been between men. And we women had to intervene to avoid a physical expression. So I cannot say scientifically, but it looks like in some way what the reader is telling has some truth. And what I do believe also is that women usually, I mean, of course, you can never generalize and say all women are in this way and all men are that way.
Right.
But I would say that women usually confront any kind of situation through dialogue, collaboration, and trying to find the common basis to progress and find a solution.
One example that I know you've spoken about is in Senegal, where there was something called the Women's Situation Room for Peaceful Elections. Can you describe that to us?
Hello? Excuse me, I didn't hear your question.
Oh, yes. I was asking about something you've spoken about in the past. In Senegal, the Women's Situation Room for Peaceful Elections. Could you describe that to us?
Yes. You know, one of the things that we have seen is how we improve women's capacity to play this peacemaker role. So we did train a lot of women in terms of how to deal with negotiations on peace settlements, and this led to this activity in Senegal, where women really could form sort of a commission to observe and prevent gender-based violence during elections, because we know that during those kind of situations, women are usually victims of violence.
And how did it work? And what did women bring to that work that was specific to women?
Well, what it worked is that they develop a system, a network, for women and men to be able to inform, report any kind of special situation against women. That could be immediately organize a work with the electoral commission on the country and with, of course, the police forces and all the forces involved in ensuring a fair and peaceful process, and also give an answer and solution to that situation. The interesting thing is that the Senegal experience was used by other people in Mali and other places to try to bring the same kind, and many of the new elections that will be this year, they will be using this example to see how they can organize themselves and ensure that women can go to vote in a safe environment and not be victims of gender-based violence.
You finished your term as president of Chile in 2010 with a very high approval rating. Do you think you brought something to the job as a woman that set you up for success?
to know exactly what is linked to the female condition, what is linked to your own way of doing things. But probably what I have spoken about women in general does apply to me, in terms that I truly believe that when you are in charge of any leadership position, and particularly in public office service, you need to put in the center of the policies the people. You don't have to establish policies where people have to adjust to those policies. On the contrary, when you design those policies, when you implemented them, you need to think on the needs, the conditions, the specificities of people, women and men, and then you have to implement it. So, but on the other hand, you need to understand, in particular when you are in positions like in government or Congress or whatever, that you are representing the whole nation, that you are not representing the ones who voted for you. And in that sense, in every society, there are normal interests and different interests, and conflict is a possibility, but it can be avoided if you develop dialogue, collaboration, and what we call in our country, because of our historical situation, civic friendship. I mean, the capacity of being adversaries, or to be different politically, to think differently, but to understand that the unity of the nation is essential, that the challenges of each nation are so important that the only way is to bring people together, to have policies with legitimacy, and to try to find the common understanding.
Let me ask you our baseline question for this series. Do you think human beings can ever abolish war?
I cannot see the future, but I really look forward to be able to do that. And I think through our work in UN Women, supporting women's capacities to be really drivers of peace and important actors in humanity's decisions and life, that we will at least be a very important part on preventing war.
We'll continue in a minute with former Chilean President Michelle Bachelet on her work at UN Women, as well as her past as president in Chile, in our End of War series, as we ask, can human beings abolish war, and would it be easier if more women were in positions of power? I want to ask you, President Bachelet, about your visit to Libya after the fall of Gaddafi, and what some of the women there told you, and much more. So stay with us, and we'll continue, listeners, with Michelle Bachelet in our End of War series coming up. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now we continue our series End of War, in which we're asking, is war inevitable, or can human beings put armed conflict behind us? One of the most common responses we get to our End of War question, if you're just joining us, is that it's possible, but only if women are in charge, or at least equally in charge. So is feminization of government a key to ending war? I am delighted now to continue with our very special guest for today, Michelle Bachelet. She was president of Chile from 2006 to 2010. She had previously been the country's defense minister and minister of health, and had been a pediatrician. She is now executive director of UN Women, an agency created 2 years ago by the United Nations to foster women's rights and the involvement of women in government. One of its initiatives is to get women more involved in conflict resolution to prevent wars. President Bachelet, welcome back to the show. Thank you for waiting out that break.
Thank you very much.
And listeners, we're going to open this for you too now. Do you think it would make a difference to ending war if more women were in charge in government? 212-433-WNYC. And how do we get there? 212-433-9692. President Bachelet, you've spoken about visiting Libya after the fall of Gaddafi, and that women leaders suggested separate men's and women's polling stations for democratic elections there. Why do they think that's needed?
Well, because the experience of in many places, and particularly in societies where women don't have yet the role they deserve, many times women don't have the independence and to vote, for example, for the candidate they really wish to vote and can be influenced by the family, by the parent, father, by the husband. So women thought that it would be better for women in Libya to vote separately. As a matter of fact, I want to tell you a curious thing. In my country, women vote separately than men, but historically, because women had the right to vote later. So when they developed the systems, women and men almost always voted in separate places. Hmm. Not because of the same reason than in Libya, but because it was just happened that way. So it's not a big issue, and I think if it produces a better sense of security on an autodetermination, I think it's a good thing.
You became the first woman defense minister in Latin America in 2002. Why did you want to run the military?
Well, you know what happens is that, as you know, I was part of the people who were affected by the military regime. But I was the daughter of a general, so I had sort of I knew the military world, but I also knew the political world. And I thought that it was important to understand the military world as a civilian, as a politician. So I started studying strategic studies. So then I thought it was important to play my part, to contribute to my country in terms of further the reform that it was going on in democracy on the security sector, and try to build a better understanding, bridging also the relation between civilians, politicians, and military to be able to have a real sustainable democracy. And I think all of us who play that role, and of course the civilians and the civil society and the militaries, did a great job, because in Chile today, there's no doubt that the one who really rules the military policies and decisions is the President of the Republic, and of course its connection to the military through the Minister of Defense.
I know that you and others in your family were victimized by the military coup in 1973 against President Allende at that time. Did that experience for you, and having to live in exile and the torture and subsequent death of your father, did that contribute or inform how you acted as defense minister, or for that matter as president?
Yeah, that's right. I think you can say that, because one of the lessons you learn when you live through all that experience is that we need to do everything possible to find ways of solving, as I mentioned before, normal conflicts of interest in a society in a democratic and I would say constructive way. So as a citizen, but also as a Minister of Health, as a Minister of Defense, and afterwards as a president, I was always looking not in a way of thinking on revenge, on the contrary, on thinking how we build on the lessons. So when we developed, one of the things we did during my government was a museum for human rights and memory, because we thought people have sometimes very bad memory and sometimes repeat mistakes from the past. So we need to educate young generations to learn from the mistakes that were done in the past. But with the following concept, we cannot change the past, but we can shape the future, and it depends on all of us. So let's educate on that idea of civic friendship, on the idea of always finding democratic ways to solve our difference.
Katie in New Canaan, you're on WNYC with President Michelle Bachelet. Hello.
Hi, it's such an honor. I was a political science major in college, and, you know, I took a lot of women's studies classes as well, and it's such an honor to be on the phone with you. And I just wanted to say that I completely believe that more women in the political realm, whether it's in the United States and in other countries, I can obviously only speak from my experience in the United States, would completely change the culture. I believe that whether it's by fact or by social means, women are more, more likely to want to solve conflicts through discussion and not through violence. And I completely believe that a few women become more like men when they're in the political realm, but many more women can change the entire culture.
Thank you. And Katie, thank you very much. President Beschley, on that last point that she said about how a lot of women could change the culture, but a few women become more like men. Here's a post from our website from somebody named Karen, and she writes, I'm an attorney, a litigator. It's clear to me after over 20 years in law that male litigators take women litigators seriously only if they adopt an aggressive, contentious male style. In other words, she's saying if women are going to succeed in the halls of power, they wind up acting like men or they don't get taken seriously. How much do you think that's true?
Well, I think first to Katie, I truly believe that. And I always said that when woman comes into politics, the woman is the one who changes. But when many women goes into politics, it's politics who change for the better. And in terms of what Karen mentioned, well, I think many women, unfortunately, had made that option, had feel that if they want to be relevant, if they want to be taken seriously, they have to act as men and forget some female capacities and conditions that I'm sure makes you very successful. But in my experience, I opted for the contrary. I opted to be a minister of defense, but without losing my own conditions, my own characteristics, my own personalities, and as a president too. So I succeeded. So I think it's not easy, but it can be done. And on the other way, many successful women, when they are in the higher level positions, they believe that they are because of their merit. Of course, they are there because of the merit. But being there because of their merit, they never should lead them to forget that they should be continuing incentivating that more women can be able to be on high-level positions and decision-making positions, because merit is important, but there's so much obstacles for women to be able to have the place they deserve that we need to do everything possible to facilitate the possibilities of women fighting against bias. And in that sense, if we act as men, women will never be able to really reach the ceiling.
Kelly in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. It's nice to talk to you guys. This is my first time calling in.
Thank you.
I just wanted to comment on an interview, I think, on Monday on the Leonard Lopez show, talking about oxytocin, and that apparently it's a chemical that is responsible for compassion and generosity and is something like 10 times higher in the female brain than in men. So, you know, if that's not a good example of why we need more women in politics, I don't know what it is.
Thank you very much. And what about, President Beschley, the history in individual countries and whether those histories can contribute to ending war as opposed to perpetuating war? So to use your country, Chile, as an example, we mentioned the military coup in 1973, and that began some very dark years for human rights and other things. Do you think Chileans today have a special revulsion against military coups and human rights abuses and maybe by extension war because of that history? Or does it wind up perpetuating that desire for blood and revenge?
Well, it depends how you deal with your past. I think the wise way, the intelligent way, and the, I would say, the human way, is to deal with the past, learning the lessons. That means trying to understand exactly what led you to that situation and trying to understand what are the kinds of, I would say, cohabitation in a society you have to develop so you won't repeat the same mistakes. So I don't think it's one path or the other necessarily. It will depend strictly on how you deal with that path. In the case of Chile, I think we have dealt with the past in a good way, in sense that not only civilians, of course, don't like any conflict anymore, not only we have tried, as I mentioned some minutes before, to maintain the memory on those issues so people are aware of that and build healthier relations inside the society, but also because the military the military are convinced that this kind of that conflict of interest have to be solved in a democratic way, and they're convinced that how the chain of command in a government is. But having said that, I have to tell you, we thought in Chile we were sort of the Latin American Switzerland. We never thought that this could happen to us. So I think the first thing is to be aware that if you don't deal with the problems that can lead to a confrontation, you are not going to avoid it. So it's so important that people, and it's so important that you do programs that the one you are doing, Brian, so people are aware that you have not to take for granted peace, and that you need to build every day everything you can do to ensure peace. And in that sense, again, women are exactly fundamental. They're instrumental for peace because of many reasons. Oxytocin can be one of them, but I think also for many other reasons because of the ways that women, the things that women care for.
Well, Margaret Mead said, war is an invention like cooking or marriage, and that human beings could decide not to use their invention anymore, and that it's not part of human nature. In our last minute, do you think that your work now at UN Women, after your presidency, is trying to take humankind in that direction?
Yes, we are trying to take womankind in that humankind in that direction, in the direction of a peaceful. But in order to do that, we also need to go in the direction of a more inclusive world, because tensions, lack of opportunities, poverty, and so on. It's unfortunately is also in the roots of war. So we need to work on going into a peaceful world, but on the other hand, on a more inclusive and just world.
Well, the ancient Greek play Lysistrata had the plot line of the wives withholding sex until the men stopped fighting a war. Now, women's roles in peacemaking can be much more direct, and we are so grateful that we've had as a guest in our End of War series Michelle Bachelet, who was president of Chile from 2006 to 2010 and is now the executive director of UN Women, an agency created 2 years ago. One of its initiatives is to get women more involved in conflict resolution to prevent wars around the world. It's been an honor. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Brian, and all the best.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come still on The Brian Lehrer Show this morning. Stay with us. And you can keep posting your responses to the question, is war inevitable, and does gender have anything to do with it? Go to the page on our website, WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Stay tuned.